also raised as Sylvie Fox. Welcome. This will be your September conversation. Sorry to have skipped August, but it was a really busy time. I actually buckled down and finished Casey Court number 9. I'm so excited. So the title of Casey Court number 9 is going to be Poisoned, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that in a moment. I hope that you guys are staying safe and staying well and doing what you can. It's been a hard time here, and if I'd known I was going to be isolated this long, I would have prepared better. Don't know how I would have done that, but somehow I would have figured it out. Anyway, so I did buckle down and finish the 9th book in the Casey Court series. It's a little bit longer than some of them, but not as long as the first one. There was a lot of story to tell. The main characters are Casey, of course. Justin McPhee now features, as well as a mom named Victoria Garza. So I want to talk about Casey Court. For the last 6 years, I think it's been since the first one came out in 2014, I've written and published 8 books in the series. And I was talking to a friend, author, actually Marina Maddox, and she looks at me and says, "You know, I think your books need a refresh." And I was like, "You're probably right." She's like, "Your covers are from 2014. It's time to update and refresh the series." And then she said, "I hope you don't take this personally." I'm going to tell you, I don't take anything personally anymore. I mean, she was right. She was right. So I sat down and thought a lot about what I needed to make the series a little bit more, I think, cohesive is what I want to say. And I brainstormed a lot, and then I enlisted the aid of my 10-year-old son, who looked at my brainstorming board and he was like, "Mommy, come on, can we just do this?" He's like, "I don't know what you've been doing for the last few days," he was like, "but I'm gonna turn off the TV and let's knock this one out of the park." And so we did. So the books are going to be retitled, and Casey Court 9, which was originally called Toxic Tort, I'm sure you've seen the cover with the smokestacks, that is history. And now the book is going to be called Poisoned, which reflects exactly what the book is about. So the other books are going to be retitled as well. The first one, Qualified Immunity, is going to be called Judged. As you know, it's about Sheila Harrison Grant, who's a judge who loses her daughter to foster care. And I'm looking forward to sort of giving the series a little bit more exposure, reaching new readers, and sort of having a cohesive, at least as I see it now, 10-book series that sort of addresses Casey Court's evolution from sort of victim of the Strohmeyer family and the Brody family to a woman who I hope, praise God, I hope, is finally coming into her own. So I want to talk a little bit about Qualified Immunity, which is going to be called Judged. I have been testing out, I think, between 11 and 13 new covers. I think I may be close to a decision. I don't know. It's hard going. Trying to figure out what readers click on most, and then frankly what's prettiest, and those are not the same, and I would like those to be the same. I want you to click on really, really pretty covers, but I'll make a decision on that soon enough. But I think Judged sort of encompasses not only how Sheila Harrison Grant was, but who Casey Court is. You know, she's judged by her friends, her family, the legal community, and that sort of pulls across that book, where the theme, I think, is about people making some very big judgments and frankly not always having the information or not always being as either empathetic or sympathetic as they could be. But I guess that's life, to be honest. What I think, another thing I've been thinking about, someone recently asked me, "You know, why do you write the books that you do?" Which was actually a fascinating question. Like 22 books in, somebody's like, "Why do you write the books that you do?" And I looked at her over Skype or Zoom or whatever, because God knows nothing is in person. I looked at her and I had to really pause a moment. And I think What I wanted to say is that I think I tell the stories of people who have gone through difficult times. And I think, after aging and reaching middle age and having a lot of time for introspection, I think that is my core story. Someone who went through difficult times, and God knows, maybe all I'm doing is telling that same story in 22 different ways. But in Qualified Immunity, which will be called Judged, I think, which was the first Casey Court book I wrote, I really wanted to talk about what it's like being a law student and being a lawyer. I was one in Cleveland. And sort of the judgment that people have around where you went to school, the kind of practice that you have, who you associate with. It is so much. There are 4 tiers of law schools if you look at like US News and World Report or who knows what other sources. And people spend so much time discussing what tier law school you went to. Did you go to a first tier law school? Did you go to a third tier law school? Did you go to a fourth tier law school? I practiced law in Cleveland, I think between 3 and 5 years, maybe 5 years. I try to forget a lot of that. But one of the first questions anybody would ask me anytime I walked into a courthouse or a courtroom is, "Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to school?" And I'm gonna be frank, I went to a first-tier law school because at the time that kind of thing was super important to me, and it's also an Ivy League school. And I would say that, and people would have to pause because I think often it wasn't the answer they expected, or it didn't give them the whatever it was they were planning to lord over me, they couldn't. And it was just so fascinating. And it's not a question I generally would ask because it's not germane to whatever I'm doing. Like, I chose the school that I chose because certain things were important to me. People chose the schools they chose because certain things were important to them. But it's a choice, it's made, it's done, and I don't know like how many conclusions I'm going to draw from it, if we're going to go to court or we're going to litigate or if you're going to be my friend or we're going to have coffee or lunch or whatever that is. I just couldn't figure out how important it was or why it was so important, but I mean it continues to be important, I think, probably in the legal community. I don't know in a practice, so who knows. But it's something that I faced on one end, and it's something that Casey faces on the other end. And I don't know. She struggles with it. I mean, she struggles. I mean, she struggles for a whole host of reasons, but that's one of the things she struggles with. But another judgment that people often make surrounds like the kind of practice you have. And I think I've mentioned this in some books. So, to be frank, if you're practicing like in-house, well, no, not in-house, excuse me. If you're practicing at a big firm, corporate law, probably not litigation, you're on the top. This is the top. This is the icing on the cake. Good hell, hats off to you. Hope you make $1,000 an hour. Things are great. And at the bottom is usually Social Security, workers' comp, those kind of things. Things that people truly and honestly need. But if you say to people, "Oh, I practice workers' comp," or, "Oh, I practice social security law, helping people who got denied social security appeal," or, "Hey, I practice in juvenile court with children and minors counsel," and these people obviously need representation. Poor children who are in one system or another clearly need representation. But it's considered a bottom tier job. And the pay is commiserate. I mean, people who are at the top are earning $1 million a year, and people who are at the bottom are earning $30,000 a year. So, I mean, the pay reflects a lot of people's value, society's value, who knows, the government's value, anyone's value on those jobs. And it's so hard to sort of move forward or have a conversation or exist in a space where every time you go somewhere, you're judged by what school you went to and what job you have now and how much you make. And those are the three things, and those they ask. I mean, I've been to too many lawyer lunches, dinners, galas, balls, fundraisers, etc. And I don't do them anymore, where those questions are asked. And Casey, at least in and what'll be called judged, is sort of facing that for the first time. You know, she's out of law school, she's pulled herself together after facing kind of a tragedy, and she's putting herself out there and is meeting resistance, I don't know, pushback, a lot of things. And it's, I don't want to call it like a trauma, but it's just she went through a difficult time. And it shapes who she is, and the choices she made after going through that difficult time continue to be judged by lawyers, judges, litigants, and everyone. And it's pretty interesting. Obviously, the other two characters in Judged are also going through difficult things. Olivia is going through the most difficult. I mean, she's removed from her mom, who is abusive and is an alcoholic and is put in foster care. And whether or not foster care, which has its own share of horrors, is truly a better environment is something I think can be deeply questioned in so many cases. And I don't know if there's any right answer. I don't know if your mother's like beating you or doesn't have electricity, whether going to foster care where somebody might beat you or not feed you and or sexually abuse you is somehow better than the place that you were. I mean, I think the bottom line I think I came to after practicing in that arena for a number of years is that if the government would spend the same amount of money they spent putting a child in foster care by and provide the services necessary to parents so that they could keep their families intact with whatever it is, counseling, substance abuse, parenting, whatever those things may be, I think that would be the best solution, but that's not the society, culture, country that we live in. And then Sheila. Oh, Sheila. What makes Sheila's life difficult? I don't know if that's clear. I think that she drinks to numb herself, as I guess a lot of people who drink do, whether they're alcoholics or not. It's certainly it's a depressant, and it numbs you, and it sort of cuts off your feelings for the moment, for the day, for your lifetime, whatever that is. And I think that she kind of had a hard road. I mean, her parents were not rich, and she felt compelled, as many people I know do who grow up with poor families, to do whatever they can to get out of that situation, to not replicate that situation, to not have a feeling of a lack of security. And she, you know, goes to school, does the slog, does all the things that she thinks are necessary to get out of that situation. And she's not happy. I mean, she's a black woman in a time in the 80s, 90s. When law firms were still are mostly white and male, and not a warm and welcoming environment for black women, and in many cases quite hostile. And she has to get through that in order to get the security that she wants, to feel comfortable. And then she marries a guy who is from her old neighborhood who I think doesn't get that. He has this other idea that family is more important. Safety and security can be had at a regular job, and she's going over the top to seek out what it is she thinks she needs. And he may be right for him. I don't know if that's right for her. She obviously has a different drive, and they were a mismatch. And she also had to navigate that marriage. I think one of the lines in the book that I really love is that Sheila says it wasn't the divorce that was a mistake, it was the marriage. And I think that's wholly true. She married somebody who did not have the same level of drive and ambition. I'm not saying that they should. Each person can have their own, but I think there was a certain mismatch. And I think that mismatch grated on both of them. And so eventually they broke up. But this is not, you know, they had a child, they had a house, they had a lot of things going on. And it tore, left a tear, left a rent. I don't know. Just sort of imploded her life to some degree. And what she was left with was being a single mom, which I'm sure she was not aspiring to be, feeling even more compelled to wrap her life in this cloak of security. But when she did that, I think she traded that ambition, that security, that need for empathy and kindness and compassion for her daughter. And that's sad on so many levels, but just sad. And I think that she takes that out on Olivia, which is unfair, just patently unfair. But maybe, and I don't know, I mean, I think about this a lot, but I think that maybe Sheila was unable to help herself. But it doesn't make for a nice person. I mean, she constantly belittles her daughter, which I think is basically stems from not liking herself all that much, who she was, who she became, who she is, I don't know. But it's just kind of a tragic situation. Although one of the lights in Sheila's life is Peyton Bennett. And can I tell you, I have the hugest soft spot in my heart for Peyton Bennett. The chapters that he's in with Sheila, which may be only like two, three, four, touched me so much. They're my favorite chapters in the book because here was a man, I'm not going to say he was the savior, but here was a man who genuinely loved her and genuinely cared for her and wanted the best, and she was unable to see it. And it's like the hugest tragedy in the book. Maybe not the hugest. I mean, some horrible other things happen, but it's one of the biggest tragedies because I think that Sheila had this chance to sort of grasp at happiness with a man who had those same ambitions and same sort of aspirations as she did, and she just couldn't hold on. And I don't know, it's because she didn't love herself enough to accept his love, or if she really didn't believe that he could sort of defy his family and his own upbringing to marry this black woman when he's a white man, in an era, well, that's always been a certain percentage of marriage, but it wasn't as high, I think, as it is now. And I think that, well, I don't know. I don't know if he could have saved her, but it's just one of the tragedies of the book because I feel like her first marriage probably was a mistake. But if she had chosen Peyton, things may have gone better for her. Maybe she would have been happier, more settled, less driven, less bitter. So many things that, could have changed, but they didn't. So she made a choice. He made a choice. I mean, he eventually got married to somebody else, and they were where they were. I think that one of the things that I don't talk about, although it may be at the end of one of the books, or I may have written about this in a newsletter, is that I think a little bit of myself is in each one of these books, and to some degree or another, but very little in some books. But one of the things that I can say is that I grew up with an alcoholic mother, who was probably less kind than Sheila, and it greatly influenced me. I think everyone says that your first book is autobiographical, and Judged was the first book that I wrote. I wrote it. It took me years, so many years. I probably started the book in 2000 and rewrote it probably 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. I mean, it was a mess for so long. But when I finally got it right, I finally got it right and published it in 2014. I probably finished it in 2008 or so. But I just, it was so personal and so hard to write, and it was so much to put that out there in the world, that I published romances under Sylvie Fox, maybe four or five before I was able to love, accept, the Casey series and put it out there. But my life paralleled Olivia's a lot. I moved from the gritty city to a suburb, and I was so isolated. I had not realized how isolated I was going to be from family, from friends, from the place where I was born. And my mother couldn't, I don't know. I mean, like when we lived in the city, with all of my friends and family around, my mother's intensity is pretty dispersed. I mean, I spent time with this grandmother, and this time with that grandmother, and this time with these family members and that family members, and hung out and did things and had a way more diverse life. And then we moved to the suburbs, and it was just me and her. And she was struggling a lot. I'm not sure why. She said raising me was hard. I don't know. I'm raising a child. It's hard, but it doesn't drive me to drink. But she said raising me was hard, and I had to sit and watch her every night, like drink herself into oblivion. And it wasn't lovely. And I really sort of, I don't know. I don't know if I felt as bad as Olivia or as an outcast or as, I don't know. But it's something that I felt compelled to write about and share. Who knows? Maybe because Sheila gets more of a comeuppance. My mother never got a comeuppance. I mean, I just went to high school and I graduated and I went to college and I left and I never went back. And that's sort of how I escaped that. Escaped in your, in physically, it took a long time to escape that mentally. If I have, that's a whole different conversation. But going through that and surviving that and thriving after an upbringing like that is really hard, but it's something I want to talk about because I want readers to know that it can be hard and it can be dark, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel, I think, for most people, not everyone. I mean, I have the friends, you know, who have people in their family who died of an overdose or who killed themselves or who had a quick demise because they couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel and they couldn't dig themselves out of the hole and they couldn't see a life different from the one they had had. But I'm living the life different from the one I had had. I can see that. And I just want people to know, I think, when writing this book, that there's a light at the end of the tunnel for dark times. Like, there's darkness and there's light. You know, there's abuse and there's freedom. You know, you can thrive after lots of different situations, and live your best life and be your true self and all the things, the pat phrases that people say. But it indeed, it's true. With work and maybe some luck and maybe a lot of resilience, but it can be done, and it's the beginning of Casey's journey, where she has to try to thrive after something tragic, not so tragic, just bad, happens to her. And whether, and Sheila and Olivia both have to sort of reckon with a horrible thing and coming to terms with what comes next. And it's not easy, and it's not a pat and happy ending, but bad things happen, and then we go on. And I think that's sort of the theme of that, and what I want to talk about from about that book. So I finished book nine, and I have a lot of time in my hands in between books. I'm gonna start book 10 soon, as soon as I figure out what. How it's going to be written. But book 10 is going to be called Abused, and it is frankly about domestic violence, which is something I also experienced, but that's a different talk for a different time. But it's something that I've been leading up to with some threads in other books, and it's something I really want to explore from a bunch of different angles. I haven't decided what those are going to be. But hopefully, in the next 6 months, at the end of that, there's a book, and those decisions will have been made. So, I hope that you have a lovely fall in Los Angeles. I'm waiting for the weather to cool down and be a little bit more bearable, for the fires to go out, for the virus to clear up. So many things I'm looking forward to. But in the meantime, I am writing and poisoned. When will it be out? That is a good question. I don't have an answer. The book is done, the book is at the editor. But what I need is to figure out the whole cover and rebranding thing. So it'll be a minute or a few months before that comes out. In the meantime, you can read the first eight books. If you go to amyaustin.com, you can click the link. or visit Amy Austin on any retailer, and all the books will be listed, hopefully in more or less series order. And the first six books are available on audio as well. Retailers, Audible, iTunes, local library, all the places. The books are available everywhere in every format you could think of, hopefully. Not hardcover and not large print, but everything else and from everywhere else. So with that, I conclude. I wish you well and have a lovely autumn.